evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, coming to you live from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Monday, August 26, 2024. The Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition says South Sudan is not ready for elections.
In this time, if there's an extension, we need grantees and grantors to be part of the process because we don't want the extension just to be normal.
And more efforts are underway for aid delivery to Darfur.
We hope that this will be a source of momentum for much bigger steps in progress down the road, but that will only happen if we continue to have that unity of purpose for saving lives and that we continue to keep a focus on the people of Sudan.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition, loyal to the country's first vice president, says the timeline for South Sudan's election scheduled for December should be extended to give enough time for completing remaining tasks stipulated in the 2018 peace agreement. But other political parties to the deal say they are ready for elections. For VOA News, Dennis Logonyi reports from Juba.
The SPLM-IO, led by First Vice President Riek Machar, says December 22nd is not the best date for holding elections in South Sudan. Pok Baluang, the SPLM-IO spokesperson, says several critical tasks in the 2018 peace agreement have yet to be carried out.
We'll have a constitutional vacuum. I think that's the bitter truth, and we must adapt to that reality. However, it must be determined what kind of extension. We have been there before. The agreement has been extended more than 2 to 3 times. However, in this time, if there's an extension, we need grantees and grantors to be part of the process because we don't want the extension just to be normal.
Moro Genesio, chairperson of the South Sudan National Movement for Change, says his party is ready for elections, but adds that he worries about the fate of some elections-related activities.
The same challenge that all the political parties are having is what is challenging the party in terms of decisiveness to actually conduct the election. Though it has been announced by the Electoral Commission that the elections shall be timely as is stipulated in the roadmap, there is no indicator that there shall be election, but of course we are prepared to contest.
Jankos Bichok Reth, Secretary General of the Federal Democratic Party, says his group is waiting for party leader Changson Chan to chart the way forward.
It's our wish we are part of. We believe that there are a number of provisions that are not yet implemented. And based on that, the parties are the only solution to this, that they should sit and decide if the election can go forward or if they can come up with any other reason. But the parties are also waiting for the outcome of the Tumaini, so that now it will be put together and then the parties will decide on what to be next. If they will decide to go for election, then it's a matter of time, it can be arranged. And if they decide that some arrangement has to be done, then now the parties will agree on this. So we are waiting for the parties to start dialogue and come out exactly of what needs to be done so that we go for election.
Sande Philip Kwot is a senior member of the African National Congress Party and the chief whip of a group known as Other Political Parties, or PP, in the Transition National Legislative Assembly. He says despite certain tasks that need to be taken care of, his party is prepared to participate in the December elections.
Until now, we are still waiting to see those of the Election Commission to come up with the timeline that is going to list all this process of the registration and issue of the campaigning and even the issue of voting and then the announcement of the result. Of course, we are still optimistic as OPP group that we are going to conduct our election. That is the partial election, the presidential election, and then the governors.
Some South Sudanese are concerned about the fate of the elections. A week ago, President Salva Kiir and his 5 vice presidents tasked key institutions of the 2018 peace agreement to come up with a timetable for the pending activities. South Sudan is slated to hold a democratic presidential election 4 months from now. However, some foreign diplomats, South Sudanese political activists and political parties have expressed concern that the timeline for election preparations is not realistic. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logonyi reporting from Juba.
From Juba, we move to Malakal, where the United Nations praised late General Bior Ajang Duat, The deceased SSPDF general and former undersecretary in the Ministry of Defense for having no records of sanctions. The head of UNMISS office in Malakal urged men and women in uniform to copy the example of late General Bior for peace to prevail in Upper Nile State. For VOA News, Mamer Abraham Kwart has more from Malakal.
Residents of the Upper Nile State capital, Malakal, gathered on Saturday to mourn and remember late General Bior Ajang Duat, a former SPLA commander who fought for the independence of South Sudan. The late General Duat died on August 13th at his residence in Juba. Alfred Orono, the head of UNMISS field office in Malakal of Upper Nile State, says General Duat left a clean record during his service in South Sudan's government. Orono urged men and women in uniform to carry the legacy of Duat by refraining from committing atrocities.
If there's anything we learn from Comrade Joraswat, is let us live together. Let us forget tribalism. Let us forget divisions. Let us be one people. If there is a saint in SPLA, it's Comrade Bior. Mind you, utter sanctions for UN, Lahabi Umutu. Everybody is praising him.
Major General Joseph Mayen Akon, the new police commissioner for Upper Nile State, says unity is the only way for remembering the legacy of the late general who was born in 1950.
If we want General Bior to remain alive, what shall we do? We must unite, special us, the people of Upper Nile, because I have seen most of our people here praising Bior. As a humble man and a liberator, if we have agreed that Bior is a humble person, let us unite, people of Malakal. Let us leave tribalism.
Jacob Dualroad, the Speaker of Upper Nile State's Legislative Assembly, who addressed mourners, says General Duat's death should mark the beginning of unity in the state.
Let us stop the language of Dinka, Nuer, Shuluk, Kuma. Let us unite as the people of Upper Nile. It's not God's mistake, you are from Dinka. It's not God's mistake, you are from Nuer. God has a purpose. Why? He put you there as the Nuer, or put you there as the Dinka. That should not be a tool to use.
Deng Jua Angok, acting governor of Upper Nile State, says the destruction caused by numerous conflicts in Malakal are visible in the state's capital. He says five tribes of Upper Nile State should live in harmony.
We need to return Upper Nile State to the state it was before. Dinka and Chuluk should stop fighting. Nuer and Chuluk should stop fighting. I'm urging the five tribes of Upper Nile to live peacefully as brothers. Let us live in the way God created us.
James Hoth, the National Minister of Labor, who honored the late general in a speech in Juba, says South Sudanese should imitate Duat's legacy. Hoth says he fought against tribalism, nepotism, and corruption. For VOA News, I am Amira Bramquad, reporting from Upper Nile State's capital, Malakal.
From Malakal, we travel to New York, where the UN Secretary General spoke with General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, head of Sudan's Transitional Sovereign Council, earlier Sunday, to discuss the movement of humanitarian aid through ADRE Chad. The two leaders agreed to facilitate the movement of humanitarian supplies to enter the Sudan. They also agreed that in parallel, the UN will work with Sudanese authorities to put in place a simplified system for expedited processing and delivery of humanitarian aids. For more on this, VOA's Phil Alexio Phil has more from Washington.
The conflict between the Sudanese armed forces and the paramilitary rapid support forces have brought on more than 7,000 events of political violence, with most of them recorded in Khartoum and the North Darfur states from July 6th to August 16th, according to armed conflict location and event data. U.S.-led mediators say they've secured guarantees from Sudan's warring parties at talks in Geneva to improve access for humanitarian aid, but the failure of the army to show up in person has hindered progress. Promises have been secured to let aid flow through the Adre crossing into Sudan's western Darfur region and along the Daba Road from Port Sudan, and progress toward opening another route through the Sennar Junction. U.S. Sudan envoy Tom Perriello.
We hope that this will be a source of momentum for much bigger steps in progress down the road, but that will only happen if we continue to have that unity of purpose for saving lives and that we continue to keep a focus on the people of Sudan. The sad thing is the crisis in Sudan is so severe that we could do four of these and still be barely scratching the surface of what the Sudanese people deserve. But let's start that journey together and let's keep making the steps forward that we can.
Perriello says despite the difficult efforts to end the fighting, efforts will go forward.
We do believe that a national cessation of hostilities is possible. We know that that is going to take a great deal of work. And I think all of us are going to continue as a team and in our individual capacities to push for those efforts at peace.
The conflict in Sudan began last year when competition between the army and the RSF, who had previously shared power after staging a coup, flared into open warfare. Philip Alexio, VOA News.
Sudan's health ministry says a dam has collapsed due to heavy rainfall in the eastern Red Sea state, sending water flooding over nearby homes. Local media say dozens of people are missing. In a statement late Sunday, the ministry said the Arabat dam had collapsed. According to the Associated Press, resources have been deployed to the area to help the people who had been stranded. The statement said at least four people had died, but did not give estimate of how many were missing. However, a local official told the Sudanese news site Al-Tagari that he believed there is to be at least 60 dead people. And another outlet, Medanik, reported there were more than 100 people missing. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, do you know how to protect yourself from mpox? That story is coming up right after the break. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Health authorities in sub-Saharan Africa say armed gangs and rebel groups are obstructing their access to towns and villages that are suspected of having mpox cases. The United Nations says international awareness is needed to reduce the surge in the virus, which has been designated a public health emergency of international concern. Muki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Officials in the Central African Republic, or CAR, say health workers striving to contain an outbreak of the mpox virus are complaining of difficulties gaining safe access to towns and villages where armed gangs operate. CAR government troops are fighting rebels to stop violence and political turmoil that began in 2013. Pierre Somse is CAR's health minister.
Cette augmentation exponentielle est observée au niveau mondial.
Somse says armed groups should know that civilians whose lives are threatened by an unprecedented mpox virus outbreak need urgent assistance. He says from less than 10 suspected cases in 2023, CAR has reported about 45 mpox cases this year, and additional victims in bush and remote areas may be unreported. The Democratic Republic of Congo, or DRC, is another country with internal armed conflict, and WHO says that the country has more than 95% of the total of about 17,000 cases of pox reported globally this year. The Central African State reports close to 530 deaths from the disease. The UN says within the past few months, the virus has spread to 5 DRC neighbor nations, CAR, Burundi, Kenya, Rwanda, and Uganda. Longunza Malasi Joseph is a former Doctors Without Borders staff member and is now a political advisor to Democratic Republic of Congo's environment minister. He says the virus spreads rapidly because humanitarian workers have difficulties securely visiting conflict-prone sub-Saharan communities. Longunza spoke to VOA via a messaging app from Kinshasa, capital of DR Congo.
People run from areas where there is conflict. And in that running away, there is no observation of hygiene. People just run for their lives. This poses a problem because you can't teach people to observe health measures when they are first running for their own lives. Health professionals sometimes have to cross areas that are not secure. They can be attacked, they can be killed, and so forth.
Cameroon officials also say rebels are making it nearly impossible for health workers to have safe access to English-speaking regions where there are ongoing conflicts between government troops and armed separatists fighting to carve out independent states or regions from the French-majority country. Since July, Cameroon has reported at least 40 suspected mpox cases with 3 deaths. Nigeria also says its humanitarian workers are being restricted from educating civilians to protect themselves from pox after 32 states reported at least 1 confirmed case of the mpox virus. Nigeria has been fighting for more than 10 years against Boko Haram terrorists near its northern border with Chad, Cameroon, and Niger. Niger, Chad, Cameroon, CAR, and DRC say they are deploying government troops to protect both civilians and health and humanitarian workers from rebels and armed groups. None of the sub-Saharan countries have reported deaths of humanitarian workers. Moki Edwin Kinzuka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
From Central Africa, we move to Southern Africa, where a drought that started earlier this year is intensifying across Southern Africa, leaving almost 70 million people in urgent need of aid in countries including Lesotho, Malawi, Zambia, and Zimbabwe. At a summit in Harare this weekend, regional leaders heard how crops and livestock herds have been wiped out, adding to food shortages. Darren Taylor has more from Johannesburg.
British aid group Oxfam says Zambia is just one of several Southern African countries experiencing a serious humanitarian crisis. The charity spokesman in Lusaka, Machinda Marongwe, says heat waves worsened by the El Nino weather phenomenon have battered Zambia's poorest communities, especially in rural areas which rely on rainfall for agriculture.
We are in the worst scenario and the situation is going to get worse. Just to give you an indicator of how bad the situation is, the dry spell has been the worst in over 40 years, and you're looking at February alone being the driest month of over 100 years. So you're looking at not an isolated event, but an accumulation of connected climatic shocks over a sustained period of time, leading to increased vulnerabilities.
In May, the outgoing chair of the Southern African Development Community, Angolan President João Lourenço, appealed for $5.5 billion in humanitarian assistance for drought victims in the region. On Saturday, he told the SADC summit donations had not materialized, leaving tens of millions hungry, malnourished, and short of water. Louis van Ravestein is head of agribusiness at South Africa's Standard Bank.
This period is about 51 days in Jan and Feb, which was critical for the production period. There was no rain and we saw very dry and hot conditions. Mainly impacted small-scale farmers and medium-sized farmers that does not have access to irrigation. Zambia lost a million of the hectares of their crop, which is half of their crop. Zimbabwe also have a lot of strain. Botswana production is down. South Africa production is down year on year. Countries like Malawi, Mozambique, Eswatini, the production is also down due to this drought period that we've had.
Maize meal is Southern Africa's staple food, but Van Ravesteyn says the drought has decimated maize crops.
We have seen prices of maize increasing of late. That's because of this period we're going through and the demand that's in the region. SADC countries will have a worse impact. There is definitely shortages and they will have to import from other countries. That obviously brings additional costs. The positive, however, is globally is a surplus in grain production in the later season. So there's not a shortage worldwide. It just needs to be imported if it can't be supplied by South Africa or by Tanzania into the neighbouring countries.
But the chairman of Grain South Africa, Derek Matthews, doesn't think the country will be able to help others with maize supplies.
We're not expecting a lot of exports this year. We don't think that there'll be sufficient supplies for a huge export program. We're probably going to have enough grain for South Africa at this point in time. If it doesn't rain, the damage is going to become more extensive, and then we probably will end up not exporting at all.
SADC's Lorenzo has reiterated his appeal for aid from the international community. Unless help comes soon, he says, many people will suffer and perhaps even die. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
From Johannesburg, we move to the United States, where Republican vice presidential candidate J.D. Vance said Sunday that he won't impose a federal abortion ban in the United States if he and Donald Trump win the White House. Meanwhile, the Democratic presidential ticket of Kamala Harris and Tim Walz keeps pushing its messaging for reproductive rights and announced a record-breaking number in campaign donations. VOA's Veronica Baldras Iglesias has the details.
Republican vice presidential nominee J.D. Vance was asked Sunday on NBC's Meet the Press whether he would commit to not imposing a national abortion ban if elected in November.
I can absolutely commit that.
His answer came 2 days after Trump wrote on his Truth social media platform, quote, "My administration will be great for women and their reproductive rights." But with some Republicans in Congress actively pushing for abortions to be banned nationwide, Vance was pressed further on NBC on whether Trump would veto that type of legislation if he were to return to the White House.
I think he would. He said that explicitly, that he would.
The Harris-Walz Democratic presidential campaign warns that reproductive rights would be obliterated under a Trump administration. Vice presidential nominee Tim Walz spoke about the matter during the recent Democratic National Convention.
And they will ban abortion across this country, with or without Congress.
The DNC overall was hailed as success by analysts. Democrats hope it will translate into a bump in the polls. Adding to the celebratory mood, the Harris-Walz campaign announced Sunday that it has raised $540 million since it launched. Senator Bernie Sanders, an independent, has expressed cautious optimism that Vice President Kamala Harris's road to the White House is clear. Sanders appeared Sunday on ABC's This Week show.
I think it's going to be a rough campaign. I think the vice president now has a very good chance to win it. She's certainly going to win the popular vote by millions of votes, and I think she has a great chance to win many of the battleground states.
Republican Senator Tom Cotton disagrees. Cotton was also interviewed on ABC.
Donald Trump has been president before. The American people know what he did. They know that he understands the kind of pain they've suffered for the last 4 years under Kamala Harris and Joe Biden. And I think that's why they're ready to return Donald Trump to the White House.
Both campaigns have several events planned for this week. Vice President Harris and her running mate will kick off a bus tour in Georgia on Wednesday. Trump is expected to hold a town hall Thursday in Wisconsin and a rally Friday in Pennsylvania. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
That's all we prepared for you this Monday, August 26, 2024. We now take you to Torre and Meridi counties for some traditional Avukaya song. We have been listening to a test of Avukaya song, traditional song the Avukaya found in Central Equatoria and Western Equatoria states. Don't forget to visit www.voaafrica.com for updates on our programs. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Helen, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
South Sudan, the world's newest country, came into being on July 9, 2011. Yet to this day, the country has never held an election. Initially scheduled for July 9, 2015, time and time again, voting was postponed for various reasons. Finally, 2 years ago, the government set a date, December 2024. In the meantime, the country suffered through a brutal civil war that killed some 400,000 people and is still trying to stabilize its economy and deal with sporadic violence, entrenched impunity, and a dire humanitarian situation. It is long past time the people of South Sudan experienced the peace, security, and freedom they have so long demanded, that they fought for, and they so deserve, said United States Permanent Representative to the UN, Linda Thomas Greenfield.
It is critical South Sudan's leaders and parties engage in urgent dialogue and bring this transitional period, started in 2011, finally to an end through peaceful and legitimate elections.
The government of South Sudan has taken some positive steps. However, the 2015 National Security Service Act, recently amended to allow the National Security Service to arrest or detain people without a warrant, is not one of them. Free and fair elections aren't just about what happens on election day. They require open civic and political spaces every single day, allowing all to meaningfully take part in democracy, said Ambassador Thomas Greenfield.
The United States, along with many other diplomatic missions, is deeply concerned that if passed into law, provisions of the National Security Service Act threaten to further erode the country's political and civic environment. By allowing arrests without warrant, the NSS Act would curtail freedom of expression, and we urge the transitional government to reconsider.
What's more, we are alarmed that over the past 5 months, the transitional government has imposed taxes and fees on UN, humanitarian, and diplomatic cargoes, said Ambassador Thomas Greenfield.
These imposed taxes and fees have forced the World Food Program to reduce reduce UN humanitarian air service flights by half. Today, over 8 million people suffer from acute food insecurity in South Sudan, a number that threatens to rise as even more Sudanese refugees flee south.
With both potential elections on the horizon, South Sudan is at a critical crossroads. The transitional government has the opportunity to choose the path of peace and prosperity over fear and desperation, said Ambassador Thomas Greenfield. We urge it to make the right choice.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.